And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. Joining me now is the godfather of trends research, and he's a very nice man too. His name's Gerald Salente. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, how you doing there, Vinnie?
It's really good, actually. It's a nice, brisk morning. Now, I would love it if you'd give me an update on what's actually happening in the world of trends, because honestly, I've thrown my TV out last year and I got no idea.
Well, I don't watch TV either that much, only when there's something special going on, you know, an address of some sort. But you can see what's going on by, you know, just opening your eyes and opening your ears and looking at the media, whether it's alternative or mainstream. And what's going on the economic front is one big Ponzi scheme. And everybody with a brain between their ears knows it. The only reason why the equity markets are going up is because of all the cheap money being flowed into the system. So when you take a look at who it's benefited, all you have to do is look at the data. And the Oxfam report that just came out showing that by next year, 1% of the people will have as much money as 99% of the rest of us on the planet. This is unprecedented in world history, along with the scam that's making it possible. So, for example, over in Europe, in Germany, Austria, Netherlands, Denmark, Sweden, Switzerland, you buy a government bond, a five-year bond, and in 5 years, you're guaranteed to get less money than you paid for it yesterday. This is unprecedented. Put your money in a Danish bank, you get negative interest rates, which means that you have to pay to keep your money there. So all of this cheap money is allowing the stock speculators to borrow money for nothing and speculate on the market, as well as having big companies buy back their stocks. So they borrow the money for nothing, they buy back their stocks, they drive up the equity prices, not based on earnings, but based on action, and they enrich themselves. So now you also have in Europe, of course, just, you know, this beginning of March, they have now negative interest rates. They just started their quantitative easing. So that means they're buying up $1.3 trillion worth of government and corporate bonds between now and early 2016. So what does that mean? It means it's juicing the equity markets. They're at seven-year highs. In Japan, with all the Abenomics, they're at 57-week highs. And in the United States, because of all the quantitative easing, the markets have gone from 8,000 in 2009 to 18,000. Again, not based on growth in the economy, because the economies are barely growing, but because of the speculation. And then you bring it back into the real life. Isn't it great to be a European these days and be part of the Euro group? Where now you're seeing the euro going back to parity to the dollar. So Draghi did what he promised. He's going to kill deflation. He's killing deflation by devaluing the euro, so every sucker out there has to spend more to buy the same, or actually to buy less. And that means also the economy's not going up. It's only going to enrich the speculators. So what does that mean? Well, it means that you have, what, 40% youth unemployment in Italy? You have, what, about 28% unemployment in Greece, and Spain's way up there? 50% youth unemployment? So the hell with you. We don't care about anybody. We're going to put more austerity measures on you. We're going to devalue your currency so it costs you more to live as you're earning less or earning nothing. How's that for fascism? Called the merger of state and corporate powers, and that's what Mussolini called it. So that's what's going on the geopolitical front.
So basically, nothing's changed since a year ago. Everything just...
Yeah, no, it has. It's gotten worse.
Yeah, because
oh, it has.
That was what I was saying. It's like, last time I turned on the news, it was just like, everything seems really, really bad, and for the last 10 years that I've been really, really following it and actually been switched on to what's really going on in the world, it only just seems to be getting worse. So this is sort of like a congruent trend. And of course, the thing that people are always asking is, oh, what's going to happen next? What's the big thing on the horizon? Tell us the future.
The big thing is on the horizon is you see it. You see it in Italy with Salvini and the Northern League, and how he's making a different play than the Northern League usually makes by bringing in Southern Italy because he's against the austerity measures. The big anti-immigration trend. And we have some 200,000 people flooded into Italy last year from the destabilization caused by NATO, particularly Sarkozy, Obama, and Cameron, by destabilizing Libya, overthrowing a sovereign nation, and turning it into a hellhole. And so the people want to get out of there. They want to get out of Egypt. They want to get out of Tunisia. They want to get out of all of these countries that are declining rapidly, particularly Afghanistan, Iraq. So you have that party growing very rapidly. Where's it going? Then you look at Spain. Out of nowhere, in a year, you have the Podemos party. Basically the same agenda. They're anti-European, anti-Euro. Not European, anti-Eurozone, where Brussels tells people how to live while they're living rich. So that's where the future is, whether it's UKIP, whether it's Le Pen's party. And again, I'm not taking sides on anything here. I'm just saying what the trend is and why the people are going in that direction. So what you're at the cusp of is a major revolution. Will it be suppressed or will it be diverted? Though nobody can predict that, but you can see the direction where it's going.
Do you have any inkling about what kind of a revolution that we're talking about? Because there's social revolutions, there's political revolutions, and then there's, of course, violent revolutions.
It can be, the social and political are interchangeable. One breeds out of the other. The violence usually comes when the government tries to stop the revolution. So will the fascist Rajoy stop the revolution? Will the fascist Renzi stop the revolution? Will the fascist Cameron stop the revolution? Will the fascist Hollande stop the revolution? And the way they stop the revolution is not always outwardly. They do it by propaganda and using little incidents to drive them into major events. For example, what happened in France with the Hedro incident. Let's get this straight. 3 people killed 17. They locked down much of the country. You saw that little jerk Hollande's approval rating going from 12% to almost 50%. It was like what happened here with George Bush after 9/11. And this imbecile in chief becomes a savior in the country after 9/11. The people buy into the propaganda.
Whoa, hold on a second. The leader lets his own people die and fails in his duty and becomes more popular as a result.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
The leader fails his people's security concerns die and then becomes more popular.
It's not even failing their security concerns. You can't stop these things. And nobody looks at the cause and effect. Do you think there are a lot of people that hate France that are of a different religion, a different nationality for slaughtering so many people in places they shouldn't be, considering Libya one of them? And how about where are they now? Mali? So then you look at the United States. I wrote about this before it happened. You could go to my website, trendsresearch.com. Go to the forecast page. Hit the one. 2001 won't be our year, Trendseer says. USA Today will be running my top trends. I warned that Americans wouldn't be safe at home or abroad 9 months before 9/11. Why not? How about foreign policy? They hate Americans because of their foreign policy, propping up dictators all over the world and providing them with the arms and armaments and security to keep the people repressed. So you can't stop this from happening. You got a world of what, 7 billion people. You're going to find a couple that are going to commit violent acts. Of course you are. But compare those violent acts to how many that Sarkozy killed with his war in Libya, 30,000, and destabilized the entire region. How many of the Americans killed in Iraq? Could anybody count above 1 million? How about Afghanistan and Libya? So when you, it's not a question of, you know, their popularity goes up because their security failed. There's no stopping this. Just to put it into perspective, with all of the CIA, FBI, NSA looking at everything that we're doing over here, they couldn't stop a cat from jumping over the White House fence, man, and running into the White House. And what do you take a dump in the president's private lavatory? I mean, so you can't stop this. They have security all over the place for these Super Bowls. A guy got on the bus in Jersey with his fake credentials from an old rock concert about 4 years ago. This was in 2014. And he ends up going up to the player of the game and sticking his head in the camera, questioning the reality of 9/11. You can't stop this. The way you stop it is by waging peace rather than war. But that, nobody talks about peace. Peace is off the agenda. You look what's going on here in the States. You want to talk about geopolitics? You have Brzezinski, Madeleine Albright. You have the new defense minister, Ashton Carter. One after another. Lethal aid for Ukraine. Great, man. Let's really jack up that violence.
Why is there so much of it? I mean, how much is the arms industry responsible for making these conflicts happen so that they can sell arms? I mean, is there a mechanism by which they actually cause these problems to happen and then profit from them?
The way that I see it, and anybody that's interested, just go to YouTube and go to Dwight D. Eisenhower, his farewell address in 1960. This is a five-star general, the supreme commander of the Allied forces in World War II, warning the people in his farewell address that the military-industrial complex is robbing the nation of the genius of the scientists, the sweat of the laborers, and the future of the children. It's not the military-industrial complex that's doing the damage. It's the sell-out low-life politicians, these little boys and girls that are power-hungry, that'll sell their soul and sell out their mother to get into office and do the bidding of anybody that pays them enough money to bow down, bend over, and sell out the nation. That's all it is. You don't have people standing up. You don't have people with courage. You have sellouts and traitors, and they're trading their nations for their security in keeping their positions of power.
My question is, it's kind of like nails when one person does put their head above the parapet as a politician and acts with honor and integrity and true blue patriotism to protect the country from all enemies, foreign and domestic, they get nailed, don't they? They get demonized and attacked in the media, sabotaged. It's really like sending a sheep into a den of wolves.
I haven't seen one that is... The only person, yeah, it happens. They did it with Ralph Nader in the States. You know, fine gentleman, we would have been a whole different society now. But again, you know, it takes enough people with courage. And I have to tell you, when I see what's going on with Podemos, UKIP, Le Pen, and again, you can look at the negatives and positives of it, but the messages in general... You know, do I agree with it? It's not a question of whether I agree or disagree. The fact is that the majority of their party's stands are for protection of the populations of their nations rather than foreign entanglements.
What do you think is going to happen in particular with this new trade agreement, the Trans-Pacific Partnership? And also, not only that, but there's the transatlantic partnership, and what I've surmised is it's more or less what NAFTA and GATT did to the United States. It's going to destroy almost everything and leave the people holding the bag and the corporations holding the money.
Well, that's well summed up. You know, the Transatlantic Investment Partnership, they put these names on them that are hard to remember so people can forget about them. They don't, in most 99.9% of the Americans don't even know this thing exists. And Obama's pushing it through with fast track. That means the government, the Congress only votes yes and no on it without reading it. It's secret. We're not even, we the people are not allowed to read the agreement that's being put together by corporations. What it essentially does, it gives the multinationals power over sovereign nations and legal issues. It's not a trade pact at all. You know, a very small part of it. And I shouldn't say not at all. A small percentage that has to do with trade. Most of it has to do with legislation and the power of multinationals to tell you what they're going to do and how you're going to obey them.
Basically, it's a... what was it somebody said before? That back in the day, Stalin and Nazi Germany, they wouldn't put these things down on paper. They'd just do it. Today, we do have them put down on paper. And that's what these trade agreements are like. It's, I don't know, if you want to set up a world government, the first thing you need to do is lock everybody's trading. And then once you've got their economies under wraps, the government is next to follow.
Let's stop at that point, world government. And that when you go, and that's what I'm trying to say when I mention Podemos, when I mention Le Pen's party, when I mention UKIP, the Northern League, and or the Five Star Movement in Italy. Syriza in Greece, to me, we're going to see where they're going to go. Right now, they look like they're pretty much going to sell out in the end and go with the austerity measures. So when you're talking about the one world government, the global initiative, that's what we're talking about, and that's what these parties can derail. Because right now it's a multinational takeover, in every sense of the word. America used to be the land of opportunity. Right now, a gap between the rich and the poor is the widest of any of the industrial nations. And it's back to levels greater or worse than the Gilded Age. The money is concentrated in the hands of the few. So it's a multinational takeover. At one time, there used to be pharmacies, drugstores, and now it's all CVS and Walgreens or Rite Aid. There used to be stationery stores. Now there's Staples and Office Depot, and now they're merging. It'll only be Staples. No one can compete because they did away with the laws that allowed competition. Robertson-Patman Act, Sherman Antitrust Act, Clayton Antitrust Act, that allowed an equal playing field that made this the nation of the land of opportunity. There are nowhere hard, no more hardware stores hardly because of the consolidation. Again, the multinationals, the Home Goods, the Lowe's, the Walmarts, have over a million employees. The big news is they're going to raise the wages to $9 an hour. Half the workers are part-time, so if they were to work 35 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, they get the grand total of $17,900 before taxes. So it goes back to what you're saying about the New World Order. That's all this is. It's a multinational takeover. And the Europeans are the last ones standing. And if they stand up against this, the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Investment Partnership, they're the ones that can stop it. It will not stop in the United States. It has to be derailed before it gets here.
Okay, and last question. A lot of wealthy people from the United States and around the world are fleeing their countries in advance of this coming New World Order. Do you think that those with extraordinary wealth leaving their countries that might have a bad thing coming is a good idea in order to protect their assets? I mean, what would you do? I understand you're a patriot, and you want to stay home and fight.
I was ready to leave the country, and I was in Berlin, and I was having a beer and looking across the street at these beautiful buildings from probably the 1880s, and beautiful wide boulevards, lovely city buildings, probably not over 16 stories tall, light shining in everywhere, parks around the perimeters. And then in between these old buildings were all new construction that was bombed out during World War II. And I'm thinking to myself, in the 1930s, the Germans had to be at the height of Western civilization. And you think of the names of the great German people, from Beethoven, Bach, Wagner, Goethe, to Einstein, to Fritz Lang, and Marlene Dietrich. And I'm saying, how could they let a two-bit freak and a bunch of them around them destroy their nation so terribly? And I'm of Italian descent, and I started thinking the same thing. You know, not for nothing, you know. Da Vinci, Puccini, Rossini, Michelangelo. How can they let a cartoon character like El Duce, Mussolini, destroy their nation? And I came back to the States. It was April 27th, to be exact, 2012. And one of the buildings on the corner from where my building is was up for sale. I'm in Colonial Kingston, New York. And we have the most historic corner here in the United States. It's the only place on each corner where there's a stone building that predates the Revolutionary War. And one of the buildings went up for sale, the Franz Rogan House from 1750. It went up when I was away. I put a binder on the building on April 30th and took possession on it on June 1st. And then subsequently bought three others of the four corners. The fourth is a museum. And the reason I bought them is that I realized, for me, there's no running away. Where am I going to go? This is the country that made me who I am. I could never be me if I was born in Italy. America gave me something that no other nation could have given me. So I said, you know, there are two-bit freaks everywhere. This is my nation. I'm staying here. So for the people that have their money and want to run because money's the most important thing in their lives, that's their trip. To me, dignity, self-respect, and courage are at the top of the list. And that's why I'm staying.
I think that's a good note to leave it on. Gerald Celente, ladies and gentlemen. Is it trendsresearch.com, your website there, Gerald?
Yes, it is, trendsresearch.com. And, of course, we have the Trends Journal. We do Trends in the News each weekday night, the real news that keeps you on top of the news and ahead of the trends. We have a Trends Monthly, and we have a conference coming up here in Colonial Kingston in June. So for more information, trendsresearch.com.
And just remember, ladies and gentlemen, the Founding Fathers pledged their property, their lives, and their sacred honor in order to resist tyranny, and so must we if we are to overthrow them. Thank you, Gerald, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand on American Freedom Radio. My very special guest joining me now is none other than the man who makes everyone wig out. It's, of course, Dane Wigington. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Vincent. Good to be back. Thanks for all your work toward the common good, my friend.
Well, sometimes you wonder whether or not the thanks are enough, because it's the obligation that you do it for and not the thanks. I was wondering as well, I would like you to elucidate and explain this recent email that you sent out about the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and how this is a bit of a fraudulent scumbaggery sort of organization. I'm very, very short on the details here. I was hoping you'd be able to fill me in.
Well, certainly, to back up a little bit, I still want to thank you, because without people like you, a lot of things wouldn't have a voice. And I do feel gratitude toward you for that. So I realize it's an obligation. I feel the same obligation, but I never take for granted when people rise to that calling. About the IPCC, yes, their data is wrong. It's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. As you mentioned again, it's the largest scientific panel on any subject in human history. But their data is wrong in the opposite direction of what most want to believe, but what most have been told, what very powerful interests have tried to convince us of, that this is all alarmism, there's nothing wrong with the climate. We know from data on the ground, it's happening now. It's what I've said for over a decade. A few other people have said the same, because that's what the data indicated. There are feedback mechanisms triggered on planet Earth, many of them fueled by climate engineering itself, what we're told is mitigation for this. And we're seeing the results of this right now. Vincent, you've probably seen all the cold in the eastern U.S., right? Vincent?
Sorry about that. I just had my mic muted there for a second.
Probably seen all the cold in the eastern U.S., correct?
Absolutely. I've been talking to it's summer here, Dane, and when I'm talking to my friends in the States, they're like, dude, there's like 5 feet of snow out my front door.
Okay, there is out their front door, but 14,000 feet up in the Sierra Nevadas, there's nothing. There's 15% of the usual snowpack. Temperatures are off the charts. In Northern California here, we were pushing 90 2 days ago. L.A. was in the 90s. In February, you don't hear a lot of talk about that. In fact, that should be a huge red flag to people everywhere. Who owns the media dissemination agencies like Weather Channel and Weather Central? The power structure owns them. Blackstone, Rothschilds. This is the kind of ownership we have of these sources of media. And what do they cover? Again and again and again. All they cover is the near record snow in Boston, which they're going to try to whip up another engineered snowstorm just so they can hit that record and make that headline. It's all they talk about. They don't talk about the absolutely off-the-chart heat through the rest of the U.S. from about the center portion further west. I mean, we're astoundingly warm here. In fact, in Northern California, we've had 2 days all winter that dipped below freezing. Two. The rest have been in the 50s, the 60s at night. So, again, people in the eastern U.S., which is where most of the population density is, it's where they have focused the constant cool downs. And in fact, and I've posted on this again and again and again, I hope people look at this, the postings under recent Geoengineering Watch. The most anomalously cold place for the entire 2014 year, and this is carried already into the statistics we have for January 2015, the most anomalously cold below normal place on the planet Earth is the eastern half of the US 48. That should be a very big red flag to people, Vincent. It's all engineered, top to bottom.
How exactly are they getting away with this? I mean, it's, oh my God, it's driving me nuts, Dane. How I can, like, look up, and I saw a chemtrail yesterday being laid over Auckland, and I'm just kind of, like, thinking to myself, how can people really, really believe that those are ordinary clouds? And I think the main explanation that I keep coming to, it's really unfortunate and quite distressing, is that they don't care whether or not they're real clouds. They just are kind of oblivious.
Well, you know, that's the part that's even more frightening than a power structure that's clinically insane and completely out of control, is a population that's hopelessly out to lunch, that doesn't care at all. They're going to care soon. I promise you, they're going to care very soon when nothing comes out of their tap in California, when they turn the spigot on and no water comes out, they're going to care at that point. But this is the paradox we face when we have, for example, in the United States, we have a U.S. military stating on the record, the greatest threat to U.S. national security of all is climate change. Now, again, let's remember that 65 years of climate engineering has destroyed the climate, or helped to destroy it. It's not the only cause, but it's mathematically the single greatest climate disrupting factor of all. So, yes, after 65 years of tearing the climate system apart, it's bound to be a threat, isn't it? And then we have the Obama administration stating on the record the greatest threat the human race faces is climate change. how foolish can any American be to think that the government's going to ask our permission to engineer the climate? That's the epitome of absolute ignorance at that point. So, you know, this stuff is in front of our face. It could not be more glaring. And we're confronting the climate science community on this. In fact, I have private meetings this Friday with Professor Guy McPherson, if you know who Guy is.
I actually do, yeah.
And I salute Guy's openness about speaking out toward the severity of the climate scenario, and Paul Beckwith as well, both on the AMIC group. You know what the AMIC group is, Vincent? The Arctic Methane Emergency Group? You heard of them?
Not yet, but now I do.
I would look them up and investigate. They're a lot of the frontline Arctic climate scientists, but although their data on what's happening on the ground is correct, and you've probably seen, Vincent, the big explosions of methane that are happening in certain places in Siberia. You've probably seen some of that.
I've heard of those. I haven't seen graphics to that effect, unfortunately.
Photographs are staggering. Looks like massive bomb craters where built-up methane. We're talking about craters 200 feet deep, straight down, from methane blowing out of the tundra. It's thawing. We knew it would. It had to happen. So we have a frontline Arctic climate science group that is speaking out about this, but when this group states that climate engineering needs to be done, as if it hasn't been going on for 65 years already and doing nothing but harm, and one of the primary causal factors we're in the mess to begin with, that's where people like this are really, at this point, such sources of disinformation it could be considered criminal, in my opinion. So people have to learn to sift the baby from the bathwater. None of us like Al Gore. I mean, Al Gore is the epitome of the power structure. Carbon credits are nothing but a sham. But the bottom line is real damage has been done to the climate, not just by climate engineering, but climate engineering, again, is really, if we look at it mathematically, the single greatest disrupting factor of all. So right now, Vincent, the human race is truly in a dark corner. And on this course, near-term extinction is a mathematical certainty if we do not change direction.
Now, isn't the IPCC and a number of environmental groups concerned about climate change, etc., advocating to a degree that they should spread particulates in the air? This strikes me as sort of testing the waters sort of thing to see whether or not people will accept it. Even in Massey University here in New Zealand, there was a panel of scholars debating about whether or not we should be geoengineering, although I don't believe that they used that term, in order to mitigate climate change. Maybe they're trying to prepare people slowly for what they're already doing.
You bring up a lot of good points there, Vincent. And one, now that we knew they would be forced to use the climate engineering geoengineering term, at some point, thus the name of my website, geoengineeringwatch.org. So now that that term is quite widely known, in fact, our site is the second thing that shows up on a net search below Wikipedia, and our traffic is about 20,000 a day at Geoengineering Watch right now, even with them probably tampering with the numbers. So now that there is a lot of attention on the term geoengineering, and you probably saw in early February there was about 36 mainstream articles covering the topic of geoengineering, from Wall Street Journal to the Washington Post to the New York Times, LA Times. Did you see that release of articles?
I didn't, actually.
Okay, I posted about 22 of the mainstream articles on Quick Links. It happened February 10th and February 11th. So the term geoengineering was on everybody's lips at that point.
Whoa, Dane, are you saying that these were all coordinated released articles, or is this an omnibus over time?
No question. This is definitely coordinated. It was over a two-day period, February 10th and February 11th. So on February 11th, my Facebook reach got cut down. My organic reach, I've never paid for any reach on Facebook, and we were reaching 40, 50,000 a day. It got cut down by 95% that day. Is that a coincidence? I doubt it. On the 11th, the day after all these articles were released, we have the AMIG group, the Arctic Methane Emergency Group. There's about 30, 40 frontline Arctic scientists issuing a public announcement that if geoengineering is not done immediately, human extinction is certain. Was that a coincidence that they released that the day after? I don't think so either. So there's clearly collusion, coordination of some kind going on, but now that the term geoengineering is becoming more widely known, they're raising the goalposts. Now they're starting to try to refer to climate engineering in terms of cloud albedo enhancement. Not very many people can figure that one out if they're not familiar with the subject matter.
They probably think it's some kind of a substitute for Viagra in the clouds.
They might. I don't laugh much, Vincent, but you always make me laugh. I'm grateful for that. I really am. But this is what we're up against. But right now, the cat is beginning to come out of the bag. You know, in some senses, they're testing the water, but it's just as cold as it's ever been. They know it. The public will never accept this. And I would remind your listeners again of a personal conversation I had with Jim Phelps. He's one of the architects of these programs going back to the 80s. I held his name anonymous until someone else released it, so I speak of it openly now. But I published this called Dialogue with a Geoengineering Insider. And what Phelps said to me, and this is indicative of how hard the power structure will try to hide this issue, Phelps said, if the public finds out, they will seek out those responsible for these programs and hang them or shoot them in front of a firing squad. Those are his words, not mine. So again, they will try to hide this. If we get this issue out in the open, it will absolutely cause a paradigm shift. The power structure will become more dangerous than they've ever been before, and they're very dangerous now. And again, I encourage everybody to remember with the climate engineering issue, aside from what it's doing to the biosphere, it's toxifying every single breath we take. People are getting sick very, very rapidly. I hear from them every day. Our bodies can only take so much. Human body is extremely resilient, but once it's had enough, it's had enough. Once its saturation levels are hit, it's had enough, and we're reaching that point.
We're reaching the point of a opposite land, like some sort of cynical irony. We need to save humanity by geoengineering to prevent our extinction. Really, what's currently threatening to make humanity freaking extinct? Well, geoengineering, of course. Well, that makes a lot of sense.
That's where we're at, though. That's the mentality of the military-industrial complex. If pounding your head against the wall hurts, you're just not pounding hard enough. So the worse things get, the more they spray. And we have, again, you have to look back at the history of this, and most people don't. Most people, even in this movement, are not looking at all the data. They're grabbing a headline here, something that feels good, and they want to believe, and they run with it. If we look at the graphs of warming on the planet, going back to the start of the Industrial Revolution, 1850, what we see is an expected and more or less linear rise up to about the late 1940s, when we know these programs were really kicked into high gear. World War II was over. The military-industrial machine needed something to do. And, of course, the climate has always been a desired weapon. So when these programs were really ramped up, and the initial effect was much more profound, it's like a lot of things in the environment. The initial effect before the negative aspects kick in has a much greater impact. So we see very anomalously a downturn in the warming from the late 40s to the early 70s. And, of course, the climate scientists didn't know this was going on, and we all know that they're clinically blind. They can't seem to see the trails in the sky, or they won't admit to it. So they weren't allowing for the climate engineering that was going on. So this downturn in temperatures was very perplexing to the climate science community. They couldn't figure it out because they wouldn't acknowledge that climate engineering was going on. Nobody would admit to it. So by the early 70s, what we see is the climate science community saying, we don't know why it's cooling. Maybe there's something in this equation we don't know of. Maybe we're heading into an ice age. And, of course, people today still harp about the fact that 20% of the climate science community was saying that then. But once the negative aspects kicked in, ozone depletion, massive ozone depletion, the disruption of the hydrological cycle, and the effect in the boreal forests, now, at about the early 70s, we saw the graph start to go up again, as we would expect. And the more it went up, the more they spray. And this is back to pounding your head against the wall and then pounding harder if it starts to hurt. And that's what they're doing. So the worse it gets, the more they spray. Very negative cycle. And again, how, in what ways is climate engineering hurting the planet? Shredding the ozone layer, massive UV, which kills plankton, which kills forests, which kills us eventually. Total disruption of the hydrological cycle. So instead of the forests absorbing more of the CO2, which they would do as the CO2 increases, more rain, more acidic rain, forests begin to thrive. None of that can happen now. None of that can happen because of geoengineering, bioavailable metals, sterilizing the soil, shredding the ozone layer again, disrupted hydrological cycle from every direction. Climate engineering is totally destroying the planet's natural response systems.
And with that, we're now coming up to break. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. This is a listener-supported broadcast, and basically, we're just going to keep on running until the Earth freaking ends, or until we save it. Once it's all good, you know, then I'll give up. So if you want to support me in my fight to expose scumbaggery and give a little bit of a platform to people who are also exposing scumbaggery, go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and make a donation today. We'd very much appreciate it. We'll be right back in just a few minutes. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on American Freedom Radio, 4 days a week from 9 till 11 Central Time. Now just entering into daylight savings for all of those of you who love your outdoor barbecuing sensations. My very special guest, speaking of getting barbecued, is Dane Wigington in the very hot, hot California desert. Welcome back.
Thanks, Vincent. Yes, it is turning into a desert here. It used to be a boreal rainforest where I live, 70 inches of rain a year. No more. Trees are dying everywhere. No sounds in the forest. It's getting bad extremely rapidly. So that's another part of this equation, Vincent, that people need to understand. This equation is non-linear. Those who believe any changes in the climate take place over centuries or millennia, that is not always the case. Even with paleo data in the past, we have seen abrupt climate change, even naturally, over the course of a decade or even a few years. But now, given the unnatural effects to the climate, which include climate engineering, of course, we are in abrupt climate change. In fact, I would argue the data indicates we're in a runaway event right now.
I think it was a line from Lawrence of Arabia, there is nothing in the desert, and no man needs nothing. And eventually I feel that that's what's going to be left for us to a large degree, nothing.
On this course, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. In fact, I don't know if you're by your email, but I sent you a few moments ago, it's called a HAM, Departure from Normal High Temperature Map for the continental U.S. for today. For today. Now, when you see this, the numbers you see in the yellows and oranges colors, those indicate how many degrees departure from normal we see. So we see all through the center part of the U.S. temperatures that are 30 degrees above normal in areas that were just 30 degrees below normal. You can't have this kind of swing naturally without a lot of jet stream manipulation, a lot of chemical ice nucleation, which are part of the cool downs. In fact, on March 5th, we had temperatures in the lower 48 of the U.S. that were 35 degrees colder than the temperatures 150 miles from the North Pole.
I'm looking at this now, and we're talking about on the border of Mexico and the Gulf of Mexico, -7 and -6 in Texas.
No, that's departure from normal. So you have to remember, this is a departure from normal high temperatures. So when you see a negative 2, that means 2 degrees colder than normal, not negative 2. But if you look at it in this context, though, look at all the areas that are 28, 29, 30 degrees above normal. It's record-shattering temperatures all through the center, center part of the country. You see that?
Yeah. That's right in the middle of the country there. I mean, yep. It must stretch up to Canada as well. If that's the case, it looks like there's a blob, sort of like a giant kidney-shaped blob that goes from the Great Lakes to the borders of Washington State and continues up up to Canada.
So what you're seeing here, though, with the exception of two states that are a degree or two below normal, the entire country is above normal to extremely far above normal. But you don't hear Weather Channel talking much about that. They're still ranting about the snow in Boston, which you see in Boston. They're 10 degrees above normal right now. So, again, the media is framing reality for a population, trying to create a certain perception, a certain division in the population, if you will, that's getting harder and harder and harder to maintain. Now, I don't know if you saw, there's big ice boulders or ice chunks washing up on the shores of New England. Did you see that?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, now did you see about the ice boulders?
Yeah.
That have appeared the last 4 years in Lake Michigan. You know about that?
Yeah.
Same scenario. This is chemical ice nucleation, and you can cause this to happen in temperatures that are far above freezing levels. In fact, the oceans off the coast of New England are at record highs, record-shattering highs. They're far above normal temperatures. Same with the Great Lakes. Earlier this year, we had the ice boulders at 40-degree temperatures. How is that possible with chemical ice nucleation? And people who don't understand this, for people who don't understand, it's going to seem impossible that this is technologically been feasible for decades. So, again, I encourage people to investigate, but this is how this sorts of phenomena are created in temperatures that are far above freezing. In fact, Vincent, in Northern California, I have 16 ponds on my land, and a lot of other owners around here have ponds as well. During the last chemically nucleated event, we noted ice on our ponds at pond water temperatures of about 40 degrees, nighttime lows that were 39, 40 degrees, daytime high 65 degrees, 4 and 5 inches of ice for 3 weeks with that kind of temperature. Now, how is that possible? Chemical ice nucleation, and the reaction was so powerful, it was actually gassing water out of the ponds. They dropped about 3 feet in that time, which is absolutely unheard of. So, again, we're seeing the same kind of thing. We're hearing from farmers back east that are noticing that there's not the normal melt process going on with the snow. There's not the normal moisture coming off of it, and that's what we would expect. It's called sublimation. When you have a chemically nucleated material, it tends to sublimate like dry ice does. It converts from a solid to a gas and partially bypasses the liquid phase in this case. So we're seeing all of that. You people who know nothing about geoengineering are noting that. So, again, the geoengineers are using every tool in their box right now to create an illusion that the planet is, or parts of the planet are cold, when in fact, again, the eastern half of the U.S. lower 48, I'll send you a map on that in a moment here. You'll see it is by far the most anomalously, the only anomalously cold zone in the entire world for the entire 2014 year.
I've been trying to stop myself from having these rage attacks at the mainstream media of late, because although the fact that I threw my TV out a year ago, there's still all this mainstream media on Facebook and everything coming at me. And there was a comedian named Stephen Hughes in Australia who says, "I don't watch television for two reasons. Number one, I'm intelligent. And number two, I have a temper." And it seems to me that this is a natural reaction to when somebody is telling you such blatant lies or committing such blatant omission as to be so out of touch with reality that you wonder how these people can live with themselves. And you wonder also how incompetent must they be if they truly believe the lies that they're spinning everybody else. And then a worse thought occurred to me. What if they don't believe it at all? What if they know? What if they purposely are lying to everybody and they're not just reading a script, that they're actually in on a scam?
I think everything. You made a lot of very important points, and I think actually everything you said is true. Everything. Every point. We have all aspects in this equation. We have those who truly have convinced themselves that what they're doing is for the common good. I think somehow there's a psychological defense mechanism in so much of academia and so much of the military-industrial complex that they convince themselves it must be for the common good because they can't face the fact that what they're doing amounts to omnicide, amounts to a destruction of all life. That is not just ecocide or genocide, but omnicide. So, again, in the case of Jim Phelps, if people read, and anybody can search this online, again, Dialogue with the Geoengineering Insider, they'll find that posted conversation. Clearly, he was convinced of what he was doing. And if you look at the dialogue, and I put commentary on that, I mean, the blindness, the absolute tunnel vision bubble mentality is so incredibly clear with him. And I know others in academia, I mean, I deal with these people fairly often, and they are just as blind. They are truly just as blind. Now, somewhere at the top, again, we have a sort of psychotic blindness in that You know, this is the common question that comes up with everybody. This can't be going on because they wouldn't do it to themselves. How many times and in how many ways have we shot down that argument? Where would we start with the amount of things that the power structure has done to themselves, has done to the planet, which will kill them eventually, from the nuclear explosions to depleted uranium ammunition to nuclear power? Where would we stop? I mean, they do this to themselves. They
the logic is like saying, oh, but a heroin addict wouldn't put their own life at risk just to get high. It's like, no, that's what they do. It's like the career option, for F's sake.
Exactly. In fact, that's a great example you just gave. It's a really good example. If you're by your computer again, when you get a global map, let me know. It's a GISS map.
Got it.
Okay, if you look at that map, that covers the ground temperature readings. And by the way, on the ground temperature readings, what we have noted is, at least in the regions we have checked, an extreme difference between the official reading for the day and the actual temperature. But here's the caveat. That difference is not in the direction that most people want to believe. It's not an exaggeration of the temperature. It's an underreporting of the temperature. A friend of mine with the Union of Concerned Scientists measured for 6 months. He noted a 4.6 degree underreporting of the temperatures night and day. That's an astronomical difference. That means it's way, way warmer than we're being told. So if you look at that map, where do you see the most blue zone on the whole map?
Eastern seaboard, yeah.
Eastern half, yep, that's exactly right. So while we have record warm temperatures in Alaska, in fact, for the second year in a row, the Iditarod dog sled race, you've probably heard of that, the famous dog sled race in Alaska, no snow. No snow in Alaska. What a surprise. Got plenty of it in Boston, you know, right at the sea level, but you have nothing in Alaska. So these are the reports that people aren't being given. And again, it's important to remember, who would want you to think geoengineering is working, that the planet's cooling? The geoengineers, the power structure. And basically, Vincent, what they're doing right now is trying to keep the population confused and divided and occupied while they're digging in, preparing for total collapse, and they are, preparing for World War III or whatever other card they will play once the curtain begins to get pulled back and they're dangerous. They're simply creating a lot of smoke, mirrors, and confusion while they are preparing for what's coming, and at the same time fueling what's coming, because it's important for people to understand, although geoengineering can and does create large-scale regional cooling, which for the military-industrial complex is a success for them, doesn't matter that it's toxic and killing everything, including us, that cooling comes at the cost of a worsened overall warming. Climate engineering is making the warming far worse, stopping the planet from responding as it otherwise would. It's a disaster from top to bottom.
How exactly do you think that people are going to be able to survive this? I mean, are we any closer to stopping these people? Have we identified which companies are involved? Because a friend of mine, we saw a chemtrail plane going overhead, and we were like, oh my God, okay, let's go see the transponder, because, you know, you can go into a website and it's got all the transponders of all the planes in your area. And that plane that we were looking at directly overhead had no transponder turned on. There's only two types of aircraft that can do that: privately owned and operated aircraft, and military aircraft. And I'm just wondering whether it's private contractors or the military who are actually behind these geoengineering programs, or a mixture of the two, with the military-industrial complex all interwoven in the middle, as they are into freaking everything.
I think the latter is the accurate answer. We know enough to know that. I mean, you have huge private sector involvement, but you also absolutely have DOD involvement, Department of Defense. So in the case, for example, of Jeppesen is a subsidiary of Boeing. It's a private contractor, of course. And Jeppesen, they manage all global flights. They coordinate the global network of the thousands and thousands of jets that are in the air every day. I spoke to a top Jeppesen executive face-to-face, and after about 15 minutes of more peripheral discussion, the moment I mentioned the term geoengineering, he turned his back and walked away. Obviously, was not about to go there, was not about to even discuss the subject, clearly involved. So, again, it's the most tangled web of cooperating entities, agencies, countries. We clearly have collusion between otherwise opposed powers, China, Russia, U.S., absolutely all covering each other on this issue. This is the issue they won't disclose, or won't, at least not yet, won't tell on the other one, because they're all doing it. They're all at this. So not only do we have governments carrying this out on their own populations, we have opposing powers doing who knows what to each other. I mean, it's a virtual war zone in the atmosphere, and we will all pay the price. And in fact, are you familiar with Abby Martin on RTTV?
Not yet.
Okay. She just, RTTV is Russia Today. It's an international news network. And Abby Martin had a big show there. And I dialogued with Abby several times on this issue, and it was clear that at one point when at the end of 2013, Russia requested that the IPCC, again, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, Russia, Putin requested that they address the subject of geoengineering. Otherwise, the IPCC wouldn't have had a single word about that issue. The largest scientific panel in human history, not a single word about the single greatest climate disrupting factor of all. That's how totally dysfunctional, and really, to go deeper, it's the climate community at this point is a mechanism of deception for the public. So Russia requested that they at least address the subject of geoengineering, which they did. At that time, Abby Martin, which is a major international TV show host, the dialogue I had with her about this issue at that time was a little more open, but then it seemed that there was a backtracking, and then she became very adversarial about even discussing the subject. She lost her show now, by the way, as of about a week ago. So it seems that the major powers are retracting into their bunkers, if you will. They're covering each other in this issue. They're all at it. They're absolutely all at it. We can see it on radar. So you have a lot of strange alliances here, if you will, Vincent, you know, from private sector to governments to competing governments. This is by far, it's not the elephant in the room, it's the herd of elephants in the room, really.
This reminds me of that, the movie 2012. If the world was about to end, would the world governments tell their people? And the answer is no, they freaking wouldn't. Because it would be chaos, anarchy, war, genocide, ba-ba-ba-ba-boom. And maybe they're just trying to keep this under wraps for as long as possible, until they've got all their escape plans in order before they drop the bombshell.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. I would argue that's the single biggest scenario that's being played out right now. They're doing everything they can to confuse and divide the populations, to try to keep panic from setting in as long as possible. With what's coming, a lot of people aren't going to be around. That's a simple mathematical fact. A lot of people don't want to hear that, and they'll walk away from whatever I say because of it. But we're too far in the game to not speak directly to what's unfolding. Our current paradigm is not going to last much longer. Industrialized civilization is a snake eating its own tail. At this point, the military-industrial complex is totally out of control. They're tearing apart the planet. Everything is weaponized at this point. And let's consider on the spraying itself. We know it's making us all sick. There is no speculation in that, no theory. It's an absolute fact. The lab tests prove it. We know this stuff's coming down on us. We know it's highly toxic, each element in and of itself. Again, we have synergistic toxicity when these elements are mixed. We have no study to indicate how cataclysmic that synergistic toxicity is. We have some elements, as I mentioned before, we know in the case of mercury and aluminum, the combination of those two metals can increase overall toxicity by as much as 10,000%. Let's add barium now. Let's add strontium, lead, zinc. We have a lot of materials coming down on us. So we know that's happening right now. So we're all being slow-killed right now. And there's no question about that. Whatever the motive is, if that's an intentional aspect of these programs or just simply a consequence, we can all speculate about that, but it's happening. Now, with the spray apparatus already in place, at any point in time, the military-industrial complex chooses to level the field. If they change that mix and they put the right elements in that mix, it's game over for all of us right then, right there.
Now, the real question is, how exactly do the people who know about this and are actually behind the schemes and trying to cover it up, what are they doing to cover their own ass? What is their escape plan? How do you escape something like the entire globe being turned into a cesspool of toxicity?
Well, therein lies the point. You can't escape it, and neither can those who dig in. You can't escape this. They might be able to hide out in their bunkers for a while, but if we stay on this current trajectory, mathematically speaking, life on Earth is over, and not just human life. I mean, we're heading right now toward a scenario called Venus Syndrome. We don't know if that'll play out. Frankly, we're on uncharted territory, and when we have the IPCC and the Arctic Methane Emergency Group with certain trajectories and certain scenarios, when they are missing the biggest piece to the puzzle of all, climate engineering, when they're lying, and they are lying, I mean, they are lying prolifically, it's unimaginable, it's criminal, but when they are omitting the biggest factor of all, if climate engineering stopped, how tenacious would the Earth's life response be? I would argue it will be beyond what we could imagine. The planet has always survived everything that's happened to it, but right now it's literally chained with climate engineering at a scale that it can't function. The planet can't function. So we don't know what that variable is. If climate engineering stopped, we can speculate. We know the hydrological cycle will be furious. There will be deluge around the planet. And this notion that the warming causes overall drought is an absolute lie. It's totally contradictory to the laws of physics. The only thing causing the high percentage of protracted drought around the planet, South America, North America, Africa, and a lot of other places, Australia, is climate engineering. When you put particulates in the atmosphere, you block sunlight. You block sunlight, light photons don't knock loose molecules in the water, reduces evaporation. You reduce wind overall, which also reduces evaporation. Hugely negative cycle. So there are so many lies being told right now, so many. And the effort to hide geoengineering is astounding. But Vincent, when you say the people are carrying this out and knowing that they will do this themselves, how many examples do we have of that? People who should know what they're doing is going to hurt them, but they do it. Those who carry out this kind of insanity, let's look at the nuclear blasts. How many films do we have of troops with their goggles on out in the ditch? And they get a little, you know, the shockwave hits them and nobody seems alarmed that they just got exposed to tremendous amounts of radiation, and they do it because they were told to. They were told, put your goggles on, hop in the trench, and see what happens. Same with depleted uranium ammunition. For those listeners who don't know what that is, the ammunition that our country uses is in many cases radioactive. It's the radioactive waste from nuclear power plants, heaviest metal on Earth. Uranium-238 works great for slicing holes through tanks. The only problem is when you use it, you leave the areas in which you used it contaminated forever. 4.5 billion-year half-life. Our soldiers load it, use it, and yet, knowing how bad it is, they do it anyway because they do what they're told. So we have a lot of people doing what they're told, and if they continue to do what they're told and don't start thinking for themselves, it's going to be game over.
So let me just encapsulate that. In today's society, if you do what you're told to do, it's game over. Pretty much, isn't it? I don't see anybody out there who is following orders, who's like totally happy and wonderful and fantastic. I only see the people who are breaking the rules. Not breaking the law, but breaking the rules. Being successful, being happy and enjoying life. And it seems that there's something wrong with all of humanity. There's something controlling the power structures of society, and they've become so corrupt over such a long period of time that people think that it's normal and they don't even notice.
What you said is very profound and very accurate. It's extremely accurate. Human nature leaves a great deal to be desired. It always has. And people I speak to who feel the only reason that the human race is behaving the way it is because of everything we've been exposed to, the fluoride, the aluminum falling on us, the GMO foods, all that has an effect. There's no arguing about that. But if we look back, in fact, and I've mentioned in the past, you know, some of my favorite literature is Stoic philosophy from the 1st, 2nd century AD. And if you look at what was occurring, the mindset there, human nature was very close to what it is now. You know the term, Nero fiddles while Rome burns, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we couple that human nature with fluoride, aluminum, the propaganda coming through the idiot box, iPhones, it's a very, very bad mix. So what we have right now, yes, is people who are trying to keep their heads in the sand till the last possible moment. They don't want to wake up. They absolutely don't want to wake up. But they're going to wake up. They're going to wake up soon because we're about there. We're going to have, again, faucets in California with nothing coming out soon, very, very soon. And the conditions here are, I mean, it's astounding the harshness of the conditions here. And again, what was once a boreal rainforest that 10 years ago, only 10 years ago, was absolutely thriving. And now it's completely silent. Trees dying everywhere. The redwoods are dying right now. I don't know if you've seen it, read about it. They're dying. You have 15,000 sea lions washing up on the beaches of California. Did you know that?
I heard as well that there were sea lions washing up with like their skin melted off from radioactive contamination from Fukushima in addition to this.
Fukushima's a big problem. I don't want to downplay Fukushima. I mean, it's, you know, Fukushima could kill us all as well. And there's no end in sight to that. But a lot of what we see happening is, I'm not saying that they're not being radiated, because it's a fact. We've had fish tests off California. They're all radioactive. We know that. But when we see the big fish kills, that's not a result of the radioactive materials. That doesn't kill with that sort of speed. What we appear to be seeing is gassing from the seafloor as the oceans warm tremendously. We're seeing CH4 and CS2, methane and hydrogen sulfide, gassing from the seabed. And that creates anoxic and hypoxic zones, hypoxic low oxygen, anoxic no oxygen. We're seeing a massive collapse of the food chain, starting with the sardines, anchovies. They're completely collapsing. In fact, I think they've gone from historic numbers in the tens of millions of tons to 150,000 tons left right now. We're talking about 2-3% of the original population, almost nothing. So we're seeing a collapse of the food chain. These seals are starving to death. There's infections that come with that. We're seeing the starfish wasting disease that, you know, it looks like it may be related to the rapidly growing acidity of the oceans, which not many people talk about that. The ocean's 30% more acidic than it was at the start of the Industrial Revolution. What we face, Vincent, is converging catastrophes. Everything is connected, as we should already know on planet Earth. Nature is all interconnected, and it's all collapsing at once. So we see the stock market pumped up. We see the climate engineering to try to confuse the population. We see a lot of things going on to just try to keep the appearance of normalcy until it will collapse with, I would argue, with blinding speed. When it comes, it will come with blinding speed.
Unless, of course, the media just continues to cover it up and try to confuse people in a perpetual motion so that even while it's happening in like free fall speed or whatever, there'll still be people walking around denying it as the people in the know rush to their underground bunkers so that they can survive for 10 years underground in the dark with their other friends who happen to be some of the worst pedophiles and murderers and torturous, sadistic, psychopathic sociopaths that the world has ever known. Don't you love irony?
They deserve each other. They deserve to be in a dark bunker together. They all do. And, you know, if we look at past equilibrium periods that weren't mathematically as bad as what we face now, the Petum event, a Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum 55 million years ago, we had an equilibrium period, depending on the stats you look at, 15 to 20 million years, and that scenario was not as bad as what's playing out now. The methane that was released then is thought to be a much smaller reservoir than what's releasing now. So, again, we face quite a dark horizon, but it's impossible to argue that our best chance, if there's one thing that we, the human race, those of us who are awake right now, if there's one thing that we could focus all our energy on to accomplish that would be the biggest leap in the right direction of all, unquestionably, that is to expose climate engineering. Because climate engineering, once exposed, would pull the curtain back.
It's the only thing we can actually stop. We can't stop the depleted uranium from getting any worse. We can't seem to stop the Fukushima thing. We can't stop the sun. We can't stop the ocean die-offs and all of these other crises that we're facing. This is actually the one thing that humanity can solve simply by stopping being a bunch of crazy dicks.
Yes, and this is the epitome. Climate engineering is the absolute epitome of human insanity. And not only would it be the greatest leap in the right direction for the planet's ability to possibly still sustain life to some degree in some places, but it would also expose to the entire population of the world that they were not only expendable, but a liability. And it would expose the power structure as a whole. I would argue this one issue would expose to the whole world, would shock the whole world's populations out of their stupor into the realization that they have, in fact, already been irreparably poisoned by a power structure without their knowledge, without their consent. And then with that knowledge, I believe we would see, again, a shockwave around the globe that's unimaginable. The power structure is trying to avert that from happening with every bit of resource they have. And once that happens, once we expose climate engineering, once we reach critical mass, that's why I argue the power structure will become extremely dangerous, even more so than now. That's where we have to start really preparing ourselves for anything, because they'll play every card they have. But if we do reach that critical mass and people within the system, we have to have them on our side. We have to have the U.S. military on our side, enough people in the military. And I know they know. I've had, at recent presentations in Northern California, I've had a couple former Marine vets say that they were watching the climate engineering news, watching our site, their platoons. They all knew about this issue. It was no secret, and the word was spreading quickly. So we have to have them on our side, quite simply.
Mm-hmm. Dane Wigginton is my guest, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. And go ahead, make a donation and support the broadcast. Very much appreciate those of you who donate $5 a month as well, because those regular little donations that come into the accounts on a day-by-day basis always add up at the end of the week to rent being paid, internet being paid, and food being paid. It is my survival so that I can help those people who are looking after your survival. And you must contribute to this if you want to continue to receive it. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere. And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, for the final segment here with Dane Wigginton from geoengineeringwatch.org. I'm just wondering, there haven't been any chemtrail jokes, have there, Dane? Because it's just not a topic that's really that funny. I think it was like Thomas Sheridan, though, from Ireland. He's a sort of an expert on psychopaths. He was like, "Hey, Vinny, do you want me to show you a Charlie Sheen chemtrail?" he grabs a $5 bill and then pretends to snort something off his desk.
That would qualify in that category. You know, if I could back up to what you said before the break, Vincent, I hope that your listeners respond to keeping you going, keeping your show going. You have a very, very unique and effective approach with this issue, with all issues. Without people like you, the word would not get out. So, again, I'm very grateful for you. As I said in the beginning of the show, I hope your listeners respond and keep the wheels turning, because bottom line is we're talking about life or death on planet Earth. If we don't get the word out and people like you don't help us get the word out, then we're on a very short time horizon indeed. So, again, I hope that happens, my friend. I sure appreciate you. And right now, whatever people are doing, if people are occupied with a lot of different things, they better stand back and decide what their priorities are. And no matter how dark it is, again, Vincent, I think of an example of if you were if you're a parent and you're standing by a raging river and your child falls in, and you know there's a very small chance you're going to be able to save that child, you're going to stand there and do nothing, or are you going to jump in and see what you can do?
Don't know
what are you
going to
do? No choice.
Yeah.
And we all have to. We all are needed in this fight. We need all hands on deck. And people who are sitting on the sidelines, going about their normal activities, you are not living up to your responsibilities to your children or to the whole. We need everybody in this battle. Everybody has a part in this battle. It's our responsibility, as you correctly stated in the beginning. I didn't want to do this for the last 12 years now. I've been at this solid, 12 solid years. My life on hold, my retirement account gone. I don't care. I'm not going to need it where we're headed. I'm not going to need it. So people who are running around the deck of the pirate ship that's sinking, loading their pockets with loot, as I've used that example before, it's not going to matter when you sink. Or those that are hiding in the deck of their, or in their cabin of the Titanic, not going to matter. It's not going to matter. And for each of those people listening, each of them, any one of you listening, could be the final grain of sand put on the scale that tilts it. Any one of you, the final pebble that triggers the landslide. Everybody is needed. And if we all pull together, we can yet change the flavor of what we face. We can. And we could yet perhaps salvage the Earth's ability to sustain life.
Yeah.
But all of us are needed.
Nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. And in fact, that's a lot better sales pitch, isn't it, Dane? Donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show or you're probably going to die, bro.
That's one way to work. You know, you mentioned earlier, too, the people that are considered, quote, normal. Mathematically speaking, we have, if we overlaid, I've used this example before, but it's important. If we overlaid the Earth's 4.5 billion-year lifespan over the course of a week, that makes each day about 660 million years. If we considered it in that time scale, just as a point of reference, then we've done all the damage we've done to the planet in 1/40th of a second, 1/40th of a second before midnight on the last day. And those who think that this can continue are considered normal. And they're absolutely mad. How could this possibly continue? It's total insanity. So again, if we look at that time frame and we've done the damage we've done in 1/40th of a second before midnight, it's clear where we're headed. It's very clear. In fact, you know, this is the Thelma and Louise moment. Again, we're through the guardrails. We're in free fall to the bottom of the canyon. We're going to hit, period, and soon. But what we do now will determine if anybody survives. That's how it is.
And it's relatively the depressing reality, and it's like the grief process. Depression's the second to last stage before acceptance. And apparently not everybody reaches that acceptance stage, so they'll just remain depressed. I'm acting under the assumption that you have a lot of experience, not only with that kind of, oh my God, what can I do, sort of depression phase of this awakening, but you've probably also encountered a lot of people that are still stuck within that stage. Can you tell me, and any of those people, if you have gotten over that depression stage and gotten into acceptance, or if you're still struggling with it yourself, and if you're not struggling with it anymore, how did you get over it? What realization did you come to that might actually help others to facilitate their clawing out of this dark hole of depression about understanding reality?
It's a good question, and this is what I would say to people who are struggling with this. What's the worst that could happen? If you engage in this battle and it doesn't turn out the way you want it to, what's the worst that could happen? You get a ticket out of the insane asylum because that's what we're all in. So if that's the worst that could happen, what do you have to lose by joining the battle? And if there is solace left in this circus of insanity that we all find ourselves in, that solace exists in this. Solidly engaging in the fight for the common good. You want to make your life matter? Engage in the fight for the common good. Life's got to be about something. It's not about golfing when you retire or a lot of other things people occupy their time with. And now, especially this critical hour, it's about fighting for the common good. And when you thoroughly engage in that and you don't try to keep one foot on your own personal pursuit of pleasure and one foot on the fight for the common good, because that doesn't work, you have to engage in this fight completely. Let go of the other things and realize none of us own anything, Vincent, except our own will. To be philosophical, that's a fact. Everything else can be taken. Everything. But we own our will. And I would argue, if there's a point in existence, it's to exercise our will correctly based on what appears to be the right thing to do. And it's pretty clear here what the right thing to do is. When we're being systematically poisoned, our children are being poisoned, their future is being robbed, no chance of a future. On this current trajectory, they have no chance of a future. Our kids have no chance. And I have two kids that I love immensely. I would die 1,000 times for them. I would in a moment. But this is the best I can do for them, and I will fight till my last breath. So if people want to have meaning in their life, stand up, join the battle, don't sit the bench, and don't make your effort in this fight conditional on a guaranteed outcome, because no one has ever had a guaranteed outcome, ever, at any point in time in human history. It doesn't exist. That's a fallacy. It's not reality. But the fact that you engage in the fight, that's what matters. So, again, Vincent, when people abandon their preconception of a certain ending that they imagine they have to have in order to make it worth their effort to fight the battle, that's not who we need in this fight. We need people that are willing to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, period.
The battle is long, and you only achieve victory if you survive it. I don't know, Dane, when I presume that you do have days where it has just literally been enough, where you're really exhausted and you actually do need some chill out time. What do you do to recharge the batteries?
You're a great guy, Vincent. Nobody ever asked me these questions. I do have those days. I happen to live in the middle of nowhere. I don't know if I ever showed you where I live. I'll send you a picture right now, but I mean, I live in the middle of nowhere, and I just had one of those days. So because I'm so in the middle of nowhere, I march out into the wilderness behind me. There's about 2,500 square miles of wilderness. It's very rugged, trailless wilderness in spots, and I have canoes hidden in the woods, and I pack into the trailless wilderness. I cross the river in the canoe, and I hike up on top of a mountain complex, and I laid there and stared at the sky, and I watched them. I stayed the night out there, and there's not too many bears out there anymore. I mean, used to be a lot more bears, and I'd have to build fairly loud barricades around me because they smell something that doesn't usually, or they don't usually encounter. But now it's quite quiet over there in this area that used to be thriving and full of bears. But I watched the spraying all day. And this is, you know, I try to make this, it's about a 7-hour arduous climb up to the top of this mountain, and you're a long ways from anybody, and that's what I want. And I watch the spraying all day. At night, they stop, of course, here with some exceptions. They generally stop at night. So grid patterns everywhere during the day by 10 o'clock at night, nothing. None of the aircraft leave any trails at night. These simple observations that anybody could figure out if they simply tried, and they got rid of their preconditioning and their programming, but people aren't trying. But that's my sabbatical, to just march out into the wilderness and climb the steepest point I can climb, and where, you know, during those moments you forget everything. When that's your goal, to climb up to the top of this mountain for that day, that's your goal, and everything fades off. But it's all wrapped into this issue, though, Vincent. I can never leave it. And when I'm marching through this wilderness area, seeing fir trees that are 500 years old in some of these canyons, they look like redwoods, and they're dying. They're all dying. So although it's a bit of an escape from my computer for the day and my work and radio, it also infuriates me so much that all I can think about is getting back and getting in the fight again. Because while there's still a tree left out there, while there's still a bird, a frog, while anything's left alive in that forest, it's up to us to fight. It's up to all of us to fight.
It's the inescapable one, isn't it? And
it is.
I was just wondering about this the other day, is that when I try to relax, what I do is I sit down and watch a movie, you know? And the thing that really pisses me off is that all the movies have kind of conspiratorial elements into them, or Freemason symbols or something. So it's just like you said, you can't really ever switch off. And I don't think the point is to switch off. I don't think the point is to escape. I think it's more to remind yourself about what you're fighting for by doing things that you enjoy. I mean, imagine if you were going to die and you'd been told that for a decade, that you're going to die in this fight, and you never remind yourself of what you're even fighting for, of what you're even risking your life for. That is when you lose your motivation. That is when you know that you have lost touch with everything that matters, when you're in the fight too long and you forget everything.
If there was ever a point in human history that had the most gravity, the most importance, it's now. It's right now. We're in that time. All is at stake. All is at stake. And people need to break their programming. They absolutely need to shatter their programming. And the time to rise to the occasion is now. It's absolutely right now. And the only defeat there is in not having tried. That's all. That's the only place defeat lies, is in not having tried. So that's an individual choice. But I hope people make it, because we do see a lot of people. I know a lot of people who know this is going on, and they've simply sat back down on the bench. And they'll have to get up soon, because we're headed toward markets that won't have any food in the shop. It's not that far away. It's not far away at all. In fact, global pelagic fish populations are, at this point, it's a 95% decline. Bluefin tuna population, 97% decline. It looks like statistically, Vincent, we're up to 300 species a day of plant and animal going extinct. Not going to continue this way much longer. There's no question about that. It's a mathematical certainty. So, again, none of us have any guarantees for life. We never have. But there's times, there's situations, Vincent, where the most astounding things happen. In fact, there's a story that... it's a true story. I saw the documentary on it, an airliner that blew up at 20,000 feet. Now, if you were told that you were in an airliner that was going to blow up at 20,000 feet, you would assume your chances for survival were zero. But in fact, a woman from such an airliner landed, still strapped to her seat, unharmed, in a jungle. What are the odds? What are the odds? So no matter how dark our horizon looks, we don't know what the outcome will be. But certainly we know if we sit on the bench and do nothing, we know what the outcome will be then. But if we're able to work together and expose this issue, this climate engineering issue, which is truly the most important issue, if we look at all the ramifications, from the simple fact that we're not going to be thinking clearly much longer if we keep breathing this stuff, it's making us sicker, cognitively dysfunctional, it's killing us. It's quite literally killing us, in addition to the whole planet. So from many different directions, I think it's impossible to argue that climate engineering is the most important issue, even about Fukushima, because we can't solve Fukushima if we can't think clearly. And we're not going to think clearly much longer given the air we're breathing from climate engineering. So again, this is the rational choice for the priority issue. And if we could expose this issue, again, giant leap in the right direction, the biggest leap we could take.
Last thing I wanted to ask you about, we have about 5 minutes left in the broadcast, is about nanotech. There's been a lot of speculation and people claiming that there are nanobots within the chemtrails that we're breathing in, and they're replicating inside our bodies or something like that. Have you heard anything to this effect?
Well, certainly you know there's technology for self-replicating particles. It may be a part of some of the experimentation. I can't conclusively say that, and I don't know that anybody can. But I will say this, that those are really trying to help spread this issue. I would not lead with that punch to someone who doesn't know about this issue. In fact, the more simple we can make this equation, the more effective we will be at sounding the alarm. The fact is, our governments are engaged in very, very toxic spraying of the atmosphere for climate modification, weather warfare. We're all breathing it. It's poisoning us. If it continues, we're done. That's very simple. That's a simple message, and people are more able to understand that simplicity. Because right now, Vincent, as you know, a lot of people aren't able to digest a whole lot. They're too distracted with iPhones and this and that. If the message is not very simple, they will regurgitate it all, and they won't get any of it. They won't absorb any of it. So the more simple we keep that message, the better. But I would, to corroborate what you're saying, there is likely a great deal of experimentation going on that we can't fully know about, probably much more than we would want to know about. So in issues like Morgellons and so forth, I think it's hard to argue. It's certainly connected with this issue. Clifford Carnicom's done a lot of good work there. I think they've proven quite conclusively there's some very bad things coming down on us in addition to what we know about the metals. But there is inarguably a lot of experimentation going on, and you can only describe what we face right now as biological warfare as well. It's not just weather warfare. When we know what's coming down on us is extremely toxic, we know we're breathing it, we know the power structure knows, and they're doing it anyway. This is nothing short of biological warfare on populations all over the globe. Can't call it anything else.
When you're under attack, you have to fight back. Otherwise, you lose. I think it gets said so often, particularly on the broadcast that you and I do, Dane, is about that motivation to, and the lack of choice that there really is. And we go over that ground again and again and again, even during each broadcast that we've done. And I think it's because repetition helps things sink into people, ultimately, really. And it may be annoying for those of you who are perhaps already active, but for those who are not, who have not heard this message before, it is an important tool in the arsenal of getting people to believe things. Just like if you repeat a big lie over and over again, people will believe them. You have to repeat the truth over and over again before people will even start to listen to it, especially if it's incredibly uncomfortable. And I came up with a scientific principle to counter Occam's razor in the modern world. Occam's razor is if there's two possibilities and one seems really, really simple, then that's probably the one that's true. And the other one that seems really complicated, that's the one that's bullshit, right? Well, I've come up with Fuckham's razor, which means if there's one possibility that is so terrible, so horrible that you just wish that it wasn't true, it's probably true. And if there's another possibility that sounds really nice and simple and easy to digest, that's probably bullshit.
You know, it's with that, again, both aspects can be looked at, both. And we need to learn to sift the baby from the bathwater, all of us. So in the case of what we see in the sky, deductive reasoning alone should be enough to convince the population that they are being sprayed. You can't have cold condensation being turned on and off. In fact, we see days when the conditions are completely, completely unacceptable for any sort of condensation trail. We know from a high-bypass turbofan jet engine they shouldn't be leaving anything behind anyway, except under the most extreme circumstances. But yet we see these trails on days when conditions are totally incompatible for anything to be seen. We know this is not condensation. It's absolutely not condensation. So people, again, the data is so clear in this issue, Vincent, and as you said, to repeat it, it's imperative that it be repeated. And for those who have already learned step A or B, they can go further into the rabbit hole. But right now, we need the vast majority to get on board with the basic message. We are all being sprayed like rats, and if it continues, we're done. And that's a message that does need to be repeated until people get it, and they help us, they pick up this yoke and help us pull. Because, you know, right now, not enough people are pulling, and we desperately, desperately need them to. And we don't have a lot of time. I want to stress that. We do not have a lot of time. This equation is extremely non-linear. In fact, right now, here's one for you, Vincent, that your listeners, some probably won't like to hear this because they don't want to believe it. How much have we heard about the expanding Arctic ice? How many headlines have we seen? It's expanding, it's getting bigger, everything, right? Guess what? Record lows right now as of March 5th. Record low. And the mass, 20% of the 30-year norm. The volume is all that matters. Understand, there's ice extent, which is surface area, which is at all-time record lows, in spite of all the headlines, record lows right now. And we have the mass, which is all that matters. That's the thickness, 20% of the 30-year norm. And also, for those who have HBO, I would encourage them to watch a new episode by Vice. It's on Antarctica, where people have been very confused about the headlines on purpose. Watch what's happening there and try to digest how much they've been deceived. And again, and remember this, climate engineering is making this worse, not better. So when they come out and try to tell us, hey, yep, everything's melting, we have to climate engineer, so that people will know at that point, not only is climate engineering literally poisoning us all, it's making the warming worse, not better. It's not a cure. It's a curse, far worse than the disease itself. So, again, it's important people understand the facts so they can stand on those facts when the governments eventually try to sell us climate engineering.
That's right. If somebody's trying to scam you, it's important that you're not suspicious, because if you are suspicious, they won't be able to scam you, bro. My very right. special guest has been Dane Wigington. Thank you very much for your time today, sir. And the website is geoengineeringwatch.org. Any choice phrases before we go?
Just this. People should arm themselves with credible data. We have flyers they can download for free. They can make their own, but make it credible. And we have a smaller informational card we're going to post soon that people can download for free. You can get those made for a penny a piece. A penny a piece if you get any kind of quantity. And that can be enough to introduce the issue to people. Arm yourself with credible data. Don't just point at the sky and rant, but help us. We need everybody. Everybody is needed in this battle.
Yeah. Annoy the living hell out of everybody who denies that this issue is a reality. Don't tolerate them calling you a conspiracy theorist. Call them something back, like a coincidence theorist. You think everything happens by sheer coincidence, don't you, bro? Even when it's like blistering hot in the middle of the desert. Oh, it must be ice particles, bro. That's the only explanation. You're a freaking brainwashed person. It's not necessarily your fault, but once you realize that you are brainwashed and you continue to act like you're brainwashed, then it is your fault. The difference between a member of the public and a person who believes in conspiratorial stuff because it's real and because there's facts and evidence is that we don't have an excuse for our ignorance. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll see you again sometime, folks. Thank you for listening.